In this week's episode, I want to start with a paradox. Without a clearly articulated plan, interconnected and interdependent teams can't combine their efforts to reach a common goal. Yet in most organizations, planning is a political, performative time suck whose outputs are only loosely connected to the actual work that teams end up doing in the next 3, 6, 9 months. So we need plans, but the planning process turns out to be borderline useless. So what should we do? We have to rethink what we mean by planning. It has to become just as agile as the rest of our operating system. It cannot be stuck in our old ways of thinking and working. Why go through all the trouble of planning only to have a stakeholder pinging you in the middle of quarterly planning to say, hey, it's not in the plan, but I'm still going to need your team to do this project for me in the next month. I mean, come on. We can do better. It is time to do better. Welcome to the Agile Marketing Edge, the first podcast dedicated to turning agile theory into real-world marketing breakthroughs. I'm Andrea Freirier, CEO of Agile Sherpas, and your guide on this climb to smarter, faster, outcome-driven marketing. Every week, we unpack the what, who, and how behind agile marketing, from building high-velocity workflows and slashing waste to measuring what really matters and scaling success across teams. You'll hear quick hit strategies you can deploy today, plus candid stories from marketers who've traded chaos for clarity and never looked back. Hit follow wherever you listen, and let's carve the next switchback together. Okay, it's pretty obvious this week that we are firmly in the planning part of the Agile operating system. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of what agile planning is and how it works, we're going to need to pause for a moment and say something obvious. Yes, you do have plans when you are agile. I kind of can't believe that I am still saying this after almost a decade of teaching people how to be agile, but this is a common misconception that weirdly persists. Yes, agile teams have plans, and we follow them, and then we plan some more. How would you know where you're going without a clear destination? Even if you're going to iterate en route, you still need to have a goal in mind. And now we're going to talk about the difference between goals and objectives later in the episode, but you've still got to have an idea of where you're going, even as you adjust the path that you are taking to get there. So yes, planning is not antithetical to agile ways of working. Let's just get that out of the way at the top. Need plans, even in an agile environment. And in agile marketing in particular, if we don't have a plan of our own, we have no means of pushing back against any kind of outside last minute interruptions or crazy ideas from other parts of the organization. I mean, if we don't have any plans of our own, why shouldn't we just accept any and all ideas from anybody and everybody around us? So I hope it's clear that yes, plans do matter, but the way that we arrive at them, the way that we do them, the way that we create them, and then how we treat them and think about them after we have created them, that also matters just as much. Because if we think about what really old school traditional plans look like, we can understand and remember why they just don't serve us in this new agile operating system. Because the way that we planned back when the world moved slowly and didn't change very much doesn't apply anymore. Back then, we could create these really big, massive plans that were backed by months of market research and these huge Gantt charts that had all of these then this and then that and if this and then that interdependencies. And all of those ifs and thens would actually happen. And we didn't have to go back and reevaluate them very often because they actually played out in real life. And it was only in moments of major crisis that we had to go back and readjust things. And so the annual plan that was based on a 5 or 10 or even 20 year vision that didn't get adjusted very much was pretty standard practice. And now if you proposed fixing your tactics for an entire calendar year and not adjusting at all for 12 months, I mean, you would probably get laughed out of a meeting if you actually said that with a straight face. I mean, the world can flip on its head in a matter of hours now. Information is traveling so fast and trends are circling the globe in a matter of days. Entire new tools or social media platforms can roar onto the scene in less time than some companies could take to agree on the next quarter's budget. So yes, smaller plans that we're going to revisit a whole lot more often and with much more intentionality are going to be essential if we're going to have any shot at managing this new high level of volatility with any semblance of sanity and with any shot at keeping people on target and managing their collective effort and pointing it in the right direction. But what exactly does any of that mean? And a big question that leaders have to be prepared to ask ourselves is, how much change are we actually comfortable accepting during the planning process and in between deliberate moments of planning, these revisiting opportunities? How much adjusting is okay, and where are we set on not changing? Because some things should not evolve and adapt. And that's not a question that I can answer for you on this podcast, because I don't know your plans and I don't know your strategy and I don't know your market, but you have to be able to sit down and have these conversations and reflect in the midst of the planning process to decide, where's your level of flex and what are your non-negotiables? And so as you're doing that, I personally find it helpful to use kind of a 3D filter here, not like 3D modeling, but 3Ds like the letter. So the 3Ds that I think are useful here are define, discover, and deliver. So you can think about this as kind of a pyramid. And then at the top of a pyramid, we have a clearly defined vision. Because we still need this. We still need to know kind of the 1 to 5 year horizon. And this is really focusing on why we do what we do. In my opinion, this should really be skewing more to the short end of that time horizon right now. So maybe like 1 or 2 years. Not 5, because things are changing so quickly. But this isn't really going to change all that much. So why does the company exist, right? And it's going to stay pretty clearly defined. It's the destination of the journey, or maybe it's like your North Star. It's a vision statement. Most companies have this, right? And in our agile planning processes, we're probably not touching this, right? It's not up for debate. This is one of those things that is not going to change in quarterly planning, especially in marketing, unless we're proposing some kind of major shift in strategy, because that's what it is. It's strategy way more than planning. And it's probably been handed down from the executive level, and we would have to make a massive business case for adjusting it in any meaningful way. So going into a planning situation, this is a given that we are really probably not going to concern ourselves with a lot unless we need to go over it and make sure that it is informing everything that we're talking about during the planning process. So during planning, we're focusing most in the middle of our pyramid, which is the what we are working on. And this is where we're in our second D, discover mode. And so you want to chunk work out at this level into pretty big initiatives. You can think of these kind of like at OKR level. We're going to go into a lot more detail about how to use OKRs and what they are, but these are usually pretty big, but usually like one quarter or 3 months, not lots and lots of quarters or into the year's time horizon. But this is the discover what's working, discover what the market wants, discover if there are gaps or new products that we might want to develop, new campaigns, new channels, right? And if you're in B2B marketing, your discover cycle is probably going to be longer. And so the things that you are planning in this part of your process are probably going to be bigger because your customers move slower, your buying cycles are longer. And so adjusting what you're doing is going to be a slower thing. You're probably going to do this quarterly and maybe even just a few times a year. And so your cadence might be longer than if you're in B2C because you might discover new information more quickly. So you might need to adjust what you're doing more often. So maybe your planning cadence needs to be more rapid. And then at the bottom of the pyramid, where the most stuff is, these are the most plentiful activities that teams and individuals are doing. We have the work that we deliver, right? So this is the third D, to customers and internal stakeholders. And you can also think of this as how we deliver value to people as marketers, right? And so here we have tasks and projects, small pieces of work with multiple steps and lots of detail. And now when we're in agile planning mode, we are again usually not getting down into this nitty-gritty level because we trust and empower teams to figure this minutia out themselves after we have clearly defined that middle layer and articulated what is important and what needs to be discovered through the work that is done. Now, this is really important because we are getting to the heart of the matter and why agile planning is so distinct from traditional planning and why we have to go through the rigmarole of planning activities in the first place. So even if you have PTSD from really bad planning, and we probably all do, you need to make this work. Because if you have a gap between vision and execution, you will have huge amounts of wasted effort. Because you still have a whole bunch of people who are going to show up and do 40 hours of work every single week. And if they don't have a plan to follow, all that time and all that effort and all that energy is going to be pointed in a million different directions. Because they do not know what is important. They might know why the organization exists. And they might know how to do their particular job, but they don't know what we're trying to discover. We don't know what we're trying to accomplish. And so they're just going to run around in a whole bunch of different directions. And there will be no collective effort in any single direction. So constant motion, but really nothing is going to get accomplished. This might sound kind of scarily familiar to a lot of you. Because what's going to happen is people will work out on their own how to fill their time. If you don't give them guidance through robust and clearly documented planning processes about what is important. So what we need to provide are agile, lightweight, adaptable plans that can point everybody in the right direction and allow their collective intelligence and experience to continually discover what is working, what's not working, and what to do next. So, maybe you have never experienced agile planning. Maybe you've only experienced the old distasteful kind. So, let me give you a better sense of what agile planning is like. And I'm going to borrow here from an HBR article on why planning doesn't have to be the enemy of agile. Now, this is from back in 2018, but still super applicable to 2025. We will link to the article in the show notes so you can check out the full context if you'd like to. But the four characteristics of agile planning that are articulated in this article are as follows. Frameworks and tools are necessary to be able to deal with a future that is going to be different than the one in which, than the present in which we are planning. We need to have the ability to cope with more frequent and dynamic changes. Sound familiar? We need quality time to be invested for a true strategic conversation rather than planning simply being a numbers game. And we need resources and funds that are available in a flexible way so we can take advantage of emerging opportunities. So let's go through these one by one because I want to give you some tactical ways to actually achieve each of these in your next planning cycle. So first, we have frameworks and tools that can deal with a different future than the one you are planning in right now, because that's like every day right now. We plan for one thing and then something crazy happens the very next day and we have to pivot. That's like the word of the year, right? Is pivot. And of course, when we are using an agile operating system or something akin to it, we have naturally these built-in moments of reflection and adaptation. So make sure you're using them. Do not skip things like sprint reviews or retrospectives. They are there to help you. Don't let them fall off the calendar in the good, stable, non-stressful times, because then when you're trying to squeeze them back in during times of stress and change and flux, it's going to be so impossible to convince people to make space for them on their calendars when they weren't there during the good times. And also make sure that you are bringing in data into these moments of review and reflection. Don't just make them a verbal rundown based on people's memories of how things are going. You want to be able to look back at real performance-based data. And that can be things like campaign performance or whatever marketing KPIs you're tracking or whatever performance metrics you are measured on for your teams. Look at those. Look at efficiency-based metrics. What's your velocity of your agile team if you track story points? What's your throughput? Like, how many cards are you getting done in a certain amount of time? Do you have time to market for your campaigns or projects? Any data that you can get your hands on. If you have a project management system, you should be able to pull some of this out of it. Whatever you've got, look at the historical trends and see what they tell you. And if you can't get a hold of any of this, fix it now. Get a hold of some kind of baseline now, because the sooner you've got a baseline, the sooner you can start to identify trends. Just baseline now. If you don't have a baseline, that is your immediate homework. All right, so frameworks and tools to help you deal with the future. Keep your retros, keep your reviews, and incorporate data. If you don't have a baseline, get it, like right now. The second thing you need in your planning is the ability to cope with frequent dynamic changes. And I can give you no better tool for this than the OKR, or Objectives and Key Results. And now, this term got really popular, got thrown around a lot, and then therefore got misused a lot. So I'm going to give you the real way to use these, because if you use them the way they're intended to be used, they are super powerful because they are lightweight, easy to understand, and easy to adjust kind of on the fly if you need to, without losing their core goal, their core meaning. So what I mean by that, the objective can often stay the same in the face of a change, even while the key results might shift. So you can keep some of the essence of an OKR, but adjust based on what's going on with your team, with the market, with your competitors. OKRs can be this nice combination of stability and flexibility. So here's how that can work. They are two parts, right? You have the O, the objective, and then the KR, the key results. And these are very different, and you got to set them up differently. So the O, your objectives, describes the overall thing that you're trying to achieve. And this should be pretty significant, like a pretty big deal. If we accomplish this thing, it is awesome. And we're going to be really jazzed that we got there. We want it to be concrete. We will know for sure if we get this done. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. We're not going to be able to debate whether it happened. And we want it to be action-oriented and a little bit inspirational, like a little bit of a stretch, maybe just beyond the threshold of what is definitely possible. But we don't want to go too far. It needs to be realistic. When you talk to people about it, you don't want them rolling their eyes like, no, yeah, sure, okay. We want to actually feel like we could accomplish it. And the objective can sometimes stretch over a couple quarters. This might be a longer term thing with the KRs shifting occasionally. That's okay. And then the KRs are more dynamic, right? Which is what I was saying about that combination of stability and flexibility. But your objective doesn't change. So then let's talk about the KRs. These are how we are measuring progress toward the objectives. These are going to be measurable milestones. And if we accomplished all of the KRs, they would ladder up to achieve the objective. So they're not just a random hodgepodge of KPIs or to-dos or tactics. These are all things that should be, if they all happened, we would accomplish the objective. And they should, at any, whenever possible, describe outcomes, not just activities. So we want to make them smart, right? Just like we have smart goals, we want to have smart KPIs. Smart KRs. So we want them to be specific, measurable, time-bound, reasonable, all of those things. So the KRs are laddering up to your O's. And these are the things when the world changes around you, you can adjust these. So you probably still want to achieve your objective, but the way you're doing it might shift as the world around you shifts. And now it's important to note that OKRs are not the same as goals. Generally speaking, goals tend to be more general and broad and long-term. Things like increase our international customer base. That's a goal. An OKR, when written well, is specific and precise and more medium to short term. like acquire 28% more customers from the UK, Australia, and Germany within the next 3 months. Something to that effect. And then under that, we would have KRs. That would be activities we would be doing in order to accomplish that objective. So OKRs are a great way to infuse your planning activities with that combination of flex and stability. All right, the third thing we need in agile planning is quality time for strategic conversation. And this is so difficult to achieve when everybody is so time strapped and it's so hard to get the time on people's calendars, much less convince them to do the requisite pre-work. But I don't know what to tell you, except you got to do it. You have to have the right amount of time set aside where people are focused and present in the room, and they have to have done the preparation. That's it. There's no getting around it. There's no magic trick here. You just got to do the work. And you also need great facilitation in the room, whether that room is virtual or physical. You have to have good facilitation or everybody's multitasking, no one's paying attention, and you will not accomplish what you set out to do in the time allotted. No matter how big your team is or how long of this time frame you're planning for, you should be able to get all of it done in 2 to 3 days every couple of months if you have good facilitation and everyone did their homework. And one more piece of this puzzle is, once you're done and you've left the room, everybody has to abide by the plan that was set. There can't be any of this behind the scenes maneuvering of, hey, can you just do me this one little favor? Otherwise, the validity of the plan that we all worked so hard on is undermined immediately. And everybody feels like they are now free to make their own choices about how they spend their time. And we wasted all the time planning because everybody's running around in a million different directions doing their own thing anyway, the same way they would have if we didn't do any planning at all. So you have to hold the line. Everybody's going to think that they are the exception. Their request is the one thing that should be allowed to slip through the cracks. It is not. You got to hold the line, because if one person makes it through, then everybody thinks they should as well. So, good facilitation, do the homework, and no one's the exception. Only then will the planning actually support the ability for everyone to focus and push in the same direction and actually accomplish the goals that you worked so hard to set in the meeting. Sorry, not goals, objectives. All right, last one here. The fourth component of good agile planning. Funds have to be available for emerging opportunities. Said another way, the money has to move with priorities. And this is why lean agile procurement is an emerging discipline. If we set the budget in January and then meet 3 more times a year to replan, but the budget doesn't change, what's the point? So it's time to get creative here, right? Could we fund priorities instead of projects? Could we fund outcomes instead of activities? We got to change how we're thinking about this part as well. I am not a lean agile procurement expert, and I am not going to pretend to be. Maybe we'll have one on the show in the future so we can dive deeper into this topic. We will link to some resources if this is a pain point for you and you want to dive deeper. But your money has to match the way that you're planning. Otherwise, why go to the trouble? And I want to wrap here with what may be the greatest quote ever to grace the pages of the Harvard Business Review, from the same article that I was quoting before about how agile and planning can, in fact, go together. universally valuable, but desperately unfashionable. Planning waits like a spinster in a Jane Austen novel for someone to recognize her worth. So be the wise suitor who sees the value of agile planning, because the world will never be moving too fast for it to be valuable. No matter how unfashionable it may become, it is our best and only way to keep from wasting time and energy on disparate, misaligned efforts. If you're wondering if planning is your biggest problem or if you should be focusing your attention elsewhere in your operations, you should check out our free marketing agility assessment. It helps you discover how your team stacks up on speed, focus, and effectiveness by giving you a score on 9 dimensions of how you get marketing work done. It takes just 10 minutes, and you'll get a clear picture of your team's overall operational health. We'll put the link in the show notes, and you can always find it at agilesherpas.com. Till next time, I'm your host, Andrea Fryer. Don't forget, the struggle is real, but so is agile marketing.